connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay. This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana and the region we know as Acadiana. Our region is rich in cultural and musical talent, and it's our pleasure today to welcome Paul and Lauren Baker. And before we get started, I'd like to ask Lauren Baker to please play one of her favorite songs, which is The Lover's Waltz. So it's our pleasure to welcome to the studio today, Lauren and Dr. Paul Baker. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Lauren, I know I'd put you on the spot asking you to play, but I wanted to share the beautiful talent that you have. And thank you very much for playing.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Well, let me introduce you both to our audience here on Discover Lafayette. And I must say that I had known of you individually and didn't realize you were married. And so what a powerhouse of talent you have in your household. First, I'll introduce Lauren Baker. She's maintained a private Suzuki violin studio in Lafayette, Louisiana for over 30 years. She's also served as chairman of the orchestra committee for the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra and is concertmaster, where she has been a featured soloist many, many times. Lauren, you're committed to keeping classical music vibrant in our community, as well as promoting the Suzuki method. A performance major at Oberlin Conservatory, Lauren earned a BA degree in communications from Spring Hill College. She's been an active performer throughout her career and has belonged to several orchestras across the South, including the New Orleans Symphony and Mobile Symphony Orchestras. And I understand that one of your most challenging and rewarding jobs was to be both a teacher and practice parent for your now grown children, Garrett and Maren Rosen. She is fortunate, yes, to be married to Dr. Paul Baker, who is headmaster of the Episcopal School of Acadiana, who's also an active musician and serves as an accompanist for your studio. And then let me introduce Dr. Paul Baker, who I know with many hats. Paul is a lifelong scholar, has earned a PhD in evolutionary and environmental biology at UL Lafayette. Paul Baker also holds a Master of Science in Paleoecology and a multidisciplinary bachelor's degree in the areas of anthropology, music composition, and chemical engineering. And I met Dr. Baker at Asbury. You've been featured as our organist for many years. You've also been a part of the Acadiana community, the musical society, for more than 28 years, an active and sought-after composer with commissions from churches, Chorale Acadienne, and the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra. And what I find most interesting is your original music and arrangements have been played around the country, not just here in Acadiana. And your Requiem of Psalms premiered in Carnegie Hall in 2005. And we've had the honor in the Swift family to know Dr. Baker as headmaster at the Episcopal School of Acadiana. And we're very fortunate to have you in that role. Our daughter Kelly just recently graduated from ESA, and I can attest that she got one of the finest educations in the United States. We're very proud to
thank you, Jan,
to have you both here in the studio today. So we were talking before we started, both of you with your musical talent, and Paul with your background in teaching, and Lauren, you both teach. Tell me a little bit about how you met and how you came together, if you don't mind sharing your love story after hearing that beautiful tune, The Lover's Waltz.
Well, I had a major change in my life and went through a separation and later divorce. And the house that I moved to temporarily before my rent house was available was being watched by a grad student at UL who was related to the people who lived in the house. These people were parents of students of mine, so there was the reason for me moving there was that they offered me this situation until my rent house was available, and I had this totally different idea about who the grad student would be, the totally wrong idea. And I drove up in my Suburban with my boxes and my two children in the car, and Paul walked out to meet me, and I have been with Paul ever since.
True love story, huh, Paul?
It's true. It's really funny. Of course, when my cousin told me that the violin teacher would be staying at the house, I was just like, oh, gosh, no. This is going to be terrible. And, of course, my expectations were completely different. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. We've been together ever since. We started playing music together then. I told her I played the piano. She was a bit skeptical, but then it actually worked out.
Yeah.
We played some Handel sonatas together to begin with. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great story ever since. And Lauren is the one who kind of got me involved in music in this community and introduced me to the director of Chorale Acadienne, Mike Gudo, at the time. And I went and sang for him. And I've been singing with chorale just about ever since, on and off. Since I've become headmaster, I've curtailed my activities a little bit, just because that's such a big job. But to their credit, the Board of Trustees wrote into my contract that they're happy for me to continue my work in the music community at the levels that I'm doing, which is unusual.
But it attests to there's so many diverse interests at ESA. They encourage people to follow their passions, and
Absolutely.
They're allowing you, I guess, to lead the way for the
students. Yeah, even from the top down, which is great. And, you know, and as part of it, as I've explained, it's part of my personal mission to really do what I can to make the world a bit better place. Mm-hmm. And through music, that's a great way that I can contribute to that.
Right.
So it's been a wonderful journey.
You know, many people may not know what Chorale Acadienne is. Would you mind telling us? Because I know that a lot of people attend that, but just as many probably don't even realize
what
a cultural asset that is.
Chorale Acadienne, I'm not exactly sure how long it's been around, but it is the sort of premier choral organization in Lafayette. And they perform a full season of music, choral music. It's dedicated to the great choral works. And they do everything from American music to this, for example, this fall they're doing the Bach Magnificat, I think, in a couple of weeks at the new St. Pius Church. And so they do, of course, they're known for their iconic Christmas concert in St. John's Cathedral every year, which is a beautiful concert where there's always some of Handel's Messiah and some beautifully arranged Christmas carols that to kind of welcome in the season. So,
and that's with orchestra.
And that's with orchestra.
Some of their concerts are with orchestra and some are with piano accompaniment or...
Right, right.
Whatever is required.
Right. So that's seasonal when you'll be involved with Chorale Acadienne.
Yeah, The current conductor, Rusty Roden, asked me to sing one of the tenor solos in the upcoming Magnificat. So I'll be doing that in a couple of weeks, which will be fun. So I'll get to dip my toes in the musical waters still.
So has it evolved over the years? Lauren, you were saying that you two, you know, perform together. Has you were teaching Suzuki, the Suzuki method of violin. Is that correct? So talk some about that, about the early days and how things have evolved from your perspective.
Well, as I moved here from New Orleans, and I was very skeptical. I was playing in New Orleans Symphony and playing in all the Sanger shows. I played Camelot with Richard Burton.
And, oh, my goodness.
Fiddler on the Roof with Topol and My Fair Lady with Rex Harrison. I mean, tons and tons and lots of shows with big stars. And then I moved to Lafayette, and I was very skeptical about how I was going to continue to do what I loved. And continue to earn a living doing what I loved. I went back and forth from New Orleans to Lafayette for a while, and then discovered Baton Rouge Symphony and played in Baton Rouge Symphony for a number of years. And it was, the quality of that orchestra was surprisingly good. And Lafayette had an orchestra. The quality wasn't nearly what it is now, but I felt it was important for me to contribute and try to continue or to help grow this organization. So I played in it periodically, and then I started getting requests for students. And before I knew it, I was doing training for the Suzuki philosophy and embraced that so wholeheartedly, and wish I had actually been trained as a child, learned that method, because it's all-encompassing. And I started teaching just because it was a supplement, supplement to my income, which I think is why most people do start teaching, sadly. But I quickly, with that training I had in the Suzuki method, I quickly discovered that teaching was so much more than just teaching someone how to play an instrument and go home and practice and come back and I'll see you next week. It's teaching the whole child, and the student should learn over time so much more about life than just playing an instrument, how to manage life, how to be tenacious. Obviously, everybody hears it's a disciplinary thing, and it is. You do learn good discipline, but you learn so much more than that. You learn about the beauty of art. You learn how to work together with other people, how to communicate, how to perform or speak in public. When you start doing it from the time you're 4, 5, or 6 years old, it's second nature. So when you're in middle school age and things start to become really, you become aware, it's not such a big deal to get up if you've been doing it for a number of years. There's a list of about 150 reasons why learning to play an instrument is so valuable. And it's like playing a sport. There's so many of the same benefits and then different ones.
Any instrument, not just the violin.
The Suzuki method incorporates the parent.
I don't know much about the Suzuki method, if you would explain.
That would take a whole interview. Another podcast. But I'll try to summarize. One of the most important things about it is listening. And students learn from the beginning to play basically by ear, but reading is introduced at the same time. They just don't learn to read the repertoire that they're playing, so their ear training is really precise and at a high level, and their memorization skills are amazing. And every parent tells me, oh my gosh, I can't believe how quickly my child can learn facts and terms because of the violin training they've had, the Suzuki violin training they've had.
Is that the ideal time to start when they're tiny?
Yeah.
4, 5,
there's
6?
A window where music is the most accessible to the brain between the ages of 4 and 6. However, anybody can start at any age and gain from it and learn to play at a certain level.
Right.
But it also requires a daily attention by the parent who comes to the lesson and then practices with the child at home, and they have to play the recordings of the repertoire. The child mm-hmm. is learning a lot.
Yeah.
And then my responsibility is huge, and I feel that if my student isn't progressing, the first place I look is me. What can I do differently? I have really become to love what I do mm-hmm. as a teacher. It's challenging, and I teach children from the ages of 2.5 to adult, well into adult years.
2.5, the violin?
I've started, 2.5 year olds.
To have them listening?
No, they're actually, they start on a box and chopsticks.
Oh.
And they learn how to hold a bow, and they learn how to balance the box, and then they learn how to do rhythms. The two sides of the body are separate. The bow is like an instrument in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It's very complex, just learning how to
right.
deal with the bow.
Wow.
So
teaching has taught you
a lot every day.
About life.
Every day.
I didn't expect all this. I mean, I'm just fascinated with
this. I learn from every student standing in front of me every single day. Uh-huh. I learn something new.
It's amazing to watch from the smallest ones to the tallest ones. And when you get those little kids who are
tiny.
I don't know. I don't understand how she does it.
I don't
think
either.
It's magic.
2.5 to get them to focus.
But it's on a foot chart, holding either a violin or a box shaped like a violin, and learning how to balance it mm-hmm. and to do the rhythms. It's something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Do we get that at ESA, Paul? Is that something that when you look at this?
We talk about it
all the
time.
I know. That would be a whole big curriculum to mm-hmm. be adding
but
in.
They do have a really unique music situation at ESA that I think is a very good fit for the school.
That's a good segue. I do want to say that ESA starts with the tiny children also. Paul, if you would jump in and talk about that. And
sure.
We'll talk about your music also, but please tell us more about Episcopal School of Acadiana and what you oversee throughout the community.
Sure. ESA started in 1979 as an outgrowth, basically, of Ascension. They didn't have anywhere for their kids to go, so we started as a 6 through 12 program and took their kids. And then when the two schools developed, Ascension developed their own full program, and so ESA ended up building an elementary school as well. So now we have two full Episcopal school programs in Lafayette, which is kind of remarkable, actually. And between the two schools, there are about 1,400 or 1,500 students getting an Episcopal education here in Lafayette, which is an astounding number for this area.
It really is.
Yeah. But ESA has a pre-K through 12 program, and we have our elementary school here in Lafayette. And when we built that school, we looked for a model that kind of matched what we did with the kids out in the Cade campus, which is where our 6 through 12 grades are. And we've always been about engaging kids and their interests and talents and developing what they can do on an individual basis and moving them up when they needed to be moved up and supporting what they need. And there's a wonderful educational model called the school-wide enrichment model that was developed by Joe Renzulli and Sally Reese up at the University of Connecticut. And so when we decided to build an elementary school, we chose that model. And it is a model that is really powerful for students because it really allows them to discover their talents and interest and develop those very systematically. And that builds lifelong learning and independence and resilience, all those traits that are just critical for the world today for the students. And so we kind of just this year have come to a point where we're practically filled in every grade level.
Really?
Almost. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So it's a really great place to be. And mm-hmm. you know, who knows what the future holds. There may be some expansion plans, but we just completed the elementary school campus in the Enrichment Center, which mm-hmm. got a lot of press last year. And it's an amazing space if you haven't been to see it yet over on Collie Saloon. And we're now starting to look at the Cade campus and mm-hmm. the original campus and what can we do to set it up for the next 50 or 60 years? So
yeah,
it's kind of a lot of fun. But It is. It's a unique school, and you know, for what it's worth, it's been ranked as the number one school in Louisiana, private school in Louisiana, which is a great honor for us. And I look at the schools that are among the top five or six schools, mm-hmm. and they are exactly who we want to be competing right. with, and on the national level, those kinds of right. schools as well. So.
I want to share that, you know, I was mentioning about my daughter, Kelly. She's now a freshman at LSU and really thriving, especially in her history class. Mm-hmm. She was so challenged mm-hmm. at ESA, and her teachers have recognized her and asked her already, would you look at, if not majoring, minoring in history? She's having so much fun, but she said they've been surprised at her depth and how she comes right back and she's That's really great. Participating. Yeah. And I said, Kelly, for a freshman, you know, ESA has opened so many doors. She loves learning. And you kind of cater, like you let the kids be who they are.
Yeah.
And not everybody's a top math and science scholar. There are many there. Mm-hmm. But there's opportunity for all the children, all the students.
Absolutely.
To thrive. And we're so grateful for that, for our family.
Oh, that's great. And I hear that story a lot. And it's I heard it, well, I saw it with our own kids who came through ESA and went on to college. And, you know, they would tell stories, and I hear this over and over, you know, my classmates are stressing out over a 4-page paper. And I was like, a 4-page paper, we can write that tonight. That's not mm-hmm. a problem, you know. And, you know, they're used to being challenged and pushed.
They
and
are.
So when they get yeah. to college, they just thrive.
Yeah, that's yeah. great. So let's kind of, we'll look back at the music. Part of what we're discussing. Paul, if we can stay with you, I wanted you to talk a little bit about, when you were, where was it? I know that you performed at Carnegie Hall.
Requiem, yeah.
Yes, I don't know anything about that. Would you share that
sure,
with us?
Sure, no, it's a really fun story, I guess. It's a crazy story. I worked, when I was finishing my PhD, I worked for a good friend of mine, Dr. Ernie Wong, who was this area's primary AIDS caregiver. He was a pulmonologist, and I worked in his research department, and this was at the time of the development of the AIDS cocktail, mm-hmm. and it was a really important time in that research, and I was doing some of that, and actually I left that to go to ESA to begin teaching 22 years ago. And Ernie died of cancer when he was pretty young, and he's 55, I think. And he was always one of my heroes. And so after he died, I had the idea to write a requiem. And I used the text from the Psalms to do this and brought it to the conductor of Chorale Acadienne, who at that time, Dr. James Haygood, and Jim's a good friend of mine. And he looked at it and said, well, we're going to perform this. Actually, they commissioned the piece. And I said, well, they wanted to commission a piece from me. And I said, well, I have this idea to write this requiem. And he said, that'd be great. Let's mm-hmm. do it. So I wrote this 6-movement requiem based on text from the Psalms. And we performed it in 2004 in the fall, I guess, and then later in the spring in 2005. And it's written for chorus and orchestra, a baritone soloist, and a children's choir. And so it's involved a lot of forces here in Lafayette. And Norma Jean Lucky was directing the children's choir at UL at the time, and they came on board and sang the children's choir part, and Chorale Acadienne mm-hmm. did this. Well, that year, one of the booking groups for Carnegie Hall contacted Jim Haygood and said, would you like to bring a group to sing at Carnegie Hall? And Jim said, I would, but only if we can do this piece. And they said, well, no, you can't do that. We don't know this guy. We don't know this
piece.
We're
Carnegie Hall.
Right. We're Carnegie Hall, right? Exactly. And Jim said, no, this is a great piece, and it'll be good, and we can bring a big group. And so they said, okay, we'll do it. And so several groups in town, including several churches, worked on this together. Another group out of Mississippi worked on this piece. And everybody met up in New York in 2005. And we performed the Requiem of Psalms in Carnegie Hall to a full house and standing ovation. It was crazy. I mean, you don't get many days like that. And
in your whole life.
In your whole life. Yeah. No, it's just, you know, it's still kind of mind-blowing if I think mm-hmm. back at it. But it was great. It was a wonderful community moment because it involves so many people from this town who sang, and who also many people traveled to Carnegie Hall to see the performance there. And so it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, what a highlight for your career.
Yeah, awesome. Really. Yeah. You don't get that one.
No. And for those that may be listening that attend Asbury, I know one of my good friends, Cindy Berry, listens to our podcast. And I want to say we enjoy when you're present, which is most weeks, that we enjoy what you contribute to our worship services. So thank you for continuing to share that with all of us. And Lauren, when I was looking at your bio, I was interested to see there was a mention about, you know, the evolution of the Acadiana Symphony. And I know you mentioned that you were a little hesitant when you moved here, and the symphony has greatly improved. And I know that's mm-hmm. That hasn't just happened. I'd like to have you explain some of that to me, what's happened over the years, because I'm so proud of what we have now
absolutely.
In Acadiana.
And it's really remarkable that the symphony is still vibrant in these times when so many organizations like it are going under mm-hmm. or just struggling to survive. And I'm not going to say that it's not a struggle to keep the orchestra afloat here. But I think the first turning point was when the board hired Shalu Lee to come and take over and try to mm-hmm. mold us into a viable group. And he did so. We started gaining, we attracted better players. We were able to pay a little bit more. He was able to do fundraising. Mm-hmm. He was an incredible fundraiser with his partner, Geraldine Hubble, who was the mastermind behind mm-hmm. the development and organizational part.
He's quite the character. He's enjoyable.
He is. Huh? He is. And he's a wonderful musician. Mm-hmm. And he brought an energy to the organization that we really needed. And it was touch and go because before they appointed him, there was a faction of people. The board was kind of split about merging with Baton Rouge Symphony or maintaining its own identity. Unfortunately, they decided to maintain their own mm-hmm. identity and hire Shalu. And Shalu had vision for the future, which is really important in a leader. He wasn't just a music director. Mm-hmm. He was on top of every detail. And he was here, I guess, 10 years. And then we had a search, and Mariusz Smoly was appointed. Mm-hmm. And Mariusz has taken the orchestra even to a different level. And I think we have a very good team of people. It takes an incredible amount of energy and time and talent for the board. And the musicians, our job is to learn our music and go perform it. And we've had to step up and do other things, some of us local people. I've been involved for many years in the board and doing more than just playing, because that's what it takes. The energy that we have now, our new board chair, Bob Cox, is wonderful. Dana Baker, our executive director, is terrific.
That's good news.
And they are all about promoting the musicians and promoting the performing mm-hmm. side of it. We got a little bit lost when we were focused more on the educational side, which is important, and no one wants to ignore it. However, the mission of the organization is to perform. Mm-hmm. And they are back on board with that, and they're promoting the orchestra in different ways. And it's really important for people in our area to understand that it's not an untouchable thing. It's very comfortable to go to the concerts, and the concerts mm-hmm. are, you can relate to the music. It's very relatable. Mm-hmm. And Mariusz is brilliant in his programming. He programs things that aren't necessarily terribly long in length, so that if you're not used to going to a concert, you aren't sitting there through three or four movements of a symphony. I miss doing that. Believe me, I miss it. But in trying to help people in the community understand that they can relate to this orchestra, that it's their orchestra, and it's really pretty amazing. And we do play with local musicians, as you know, as our we've played with Zydeco, Cajun groups, Roddy Romero. I mean, a number of people. I can't even think of them all right now, but just incredible local talent that we play with. And we have a wonderful Christmas concert that, I mean, if you can't relate to that. we have chorus involved, and I think this year Children's Chorus is going to be singing.
It's going to be great, yeah.
So it's we're more than hanging on. The community is behind us, and we just need to keep that support coming and keep us going. We've been going for probably 40 years now.
Right. One thing I want to emphasize too is that it's affordable to attend symphony performances. You know, it almost kills me when you go to the movies. You know, you pay for your tickets, which I love seeing things on the big screen, but then you buy your popcorn and drinks and it adds up, and you can go to the symphony. You don't have to be all dressed up. You go in a respectful way, but you don't have to have on cocktail attire.
Correct.
And you can have a really wonderful evening.
For less.
And not break the bank.
For less than going to a movie.
And I don't think, you know, sometimes people don't know because they just don't know. If their friends don't attend.
Yeah.
Or they think it might just be for an older crowd, like you said, that's expecting more of a long performance that they won't relate to. But that's not at all.
No.
What it is, the typical performance. I know you've had, John and I, my husband, have gone on date nights where they'd have entertainers come in and partner, you know, like Frank Sinatra-ish singers coming in. And it's really fun. And it's, you see all types of people there. It's not what you might stereotype a symphony performance as. So I do want to get that in. And, cause I, for me, looking at our community, we have so many musical performances. We have, you know, we have free concerts that are downtown. We have the festivals. But the symphony adds that continuing cultural component that every community needs to stay vibrant.
And it also is a really important question that businesses who are thinking about moving different areas, one of the first things they ask is, do you have a symphony orchestra in your town?
Right. And we may not think about that living here. That that is something that people look at, the whole cultural component.
Yeah.
Not just free festivals, but what enrichment can we offer?
Yeah, and I think that's a blessing and a curse for the orchestra organization, because there are so many varied cultural offerings here all the time.
All the time. Yeah, people love music here. It's, we're blessed, you know, with an overflow of talent.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. So what's it like being in a, if I can ask this, I don't know if anyone's ever asked you, what's it like being up there on the stage playing for the orchestra? You ever get nervous?
Oh, I get anxious. Yeah, I do. It depends on the concert. But one of the issues that we have right now as an organization is budgetary. So we're not allowed or afforded the number of rehearsals we really need. For instance, for the concert we did a couple weeks ago, which was on a Thursday night, we had two rehearsals to put that whole thing together.
Which is not many.
No. And so
not optimum.
Sometimes I'm sitting there in the middle of a performance looking at the music thinking, did we even rehearse this part? I don't remember rehearsing this part, which is not the best. But if you have a capable conductor, which we have more than a capable conductor, he takes some of that anxiety away, because we know that if we're with him, we're going to be together. We're going to be okay. It's important to me to play in that role as concertmaster, because I feel that there are a lot of people in the audience who are used to seeing me in that chair.
Definitely.
And I've come to feel very connected to the audience that way. And I really, every single time I play, I am playing my heart out. And I'm playing for that audience. And I want to give them the absolute very best that I am capable of doing. And that puts pressure on me.
Right.
That really does put pressure on me, but I love it.
Yeah. Paul, do you get, when you're performing, I know you perform solo and with others, do you feel that same anxiety, or are you more laid
no.
back?
No, it's so annoying.
Laid back. Like he's turning red. You can't see.
I don't get too nervous anymore. I can remember though when I first started singing, and singing and violin playing are really similar. It's a very personal mm-hmm. expression. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started singing, and I would sing a solo, I would get really nervous, and
you
I don't
forget
know, just,
the words, like you know.
Yeah. Just about. there was one time I was singing the solos for Chorale Acadienne and the Messiah, the opening solos of the Messiah, and for the Christmas concert. And I was up there singing, and I was looking at the church.
Yeah, you remember this?
And I was just looking around thinking, gosh, the church just looks beautiful right now.
And he's singing.
And I'm singing, and I'm thinking, oh, where am I?
Where am I in the song? Yeah.
And luckily, I had enough experience. I had done it enough times that I guess I was on autopilot a little bit,
oh my
and
goodness,
it kind
Paul.
Of made it through it just mm-hmm. fine. But I realized you really need to probably focus.
Yeah, at least for that moment, you know, while you're singing solo.
I start focusing perhaps, way so. Ahead of a performance. Yeah. And I mean, I don't talk very much uh-huh. and I just rest. And if there's time to rest and dress, and I'm really focusing on what we're about to do. And he's just all over the place, just doing normal stuff, gets in the car and gets up and sings.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous of that.
Yeah. But I mean, you're different personalities.
Oh, yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
what makes you so special together. But I just had to laugh because I know that brain freeze feeling where mm-hmm. you just,
absolutely,
you know, from anxiety, it's it can be crippling. But you were saying, Lauren, at the beginning, we were talking about your love of teaching. I can mm-hmm. see how when you're teaching young students, the babies, for them to be composed, they have to learn how to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how that would go into your
absolutely.
Adult career, your academic career.
We spend a
focusing.
Lot of time early on in lessons mm-hmm. learning exactly how to do that. And
yeah.
it's quite challenging.
And I guess the more you do it in life, the more you've played, you know that even if you fumble, you're going to get through it. You just
oh, yeah.
keep on going.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah. So do y'all play together? I was looking on your website, Lauren. I want to get in that you two
yeah.
perform. You you are available for private
events. Yeah,
let's
talk
about
weddings.
That.
Well, I have a website with my friend, colleague, and partner, Emma Guidry, called Vermilion Strings. Mm-hmm. It's vermilionstrings.net. And it's for... It has videos, it has frequently asked questions, it has bios of musicians we use, and I basically book events, weddings, private parties, or corporate events, whatever mm-hmm. people want musicians for. Paul plays with me sometimes. Sometimes he sings when we do weddings. It just depends on the situation and availability, but we have fun doing it. I think I like doing it more than he does.
Is he a good employee?
Oh, kind of.
I'm good in the moment. I'm not good in the booking.
Yeah. He. I mean, he does have quite a full plate. And then I say,
yes,
oh, honey, put this down on your calendar. You're going to be playing this wedding with me. But sometimes people request him mm-hmm. specifically because they want him to sing or we have a family connection uh-huh. and he's always very happy to do that.
That's great.
But we have any combination of ensembles with strings. We can add trumpet, harp, guitar, mm-hmm. organ, piano, whatever people need. But mm-hmm. I enjoy doing that. It's a lot of extra work. I spend my days, half of my day is at the computer organizing weddings, or I also book orchestras, small orchestras for oh. churches in the area and for holidays like Easter and mm-hmm. Christmas. Several churches use me to hire their strings for them. And then the second half of the day is teaching.
Yeah, so I appreciate the time you both have taken today. This is such an honor to
sure.
have you here during the day.
Sure, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit. We focused on music and education. I don't know that you have any spare time. But if you do find spare time, do you guys do things just totally like unrelated to your day jobs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you like to do to relax? I know.
Swim.
Yeah, we were lucky. We built a pool about a year ago. And so I swim every day if I can.
With his dog.
With our
dog.
In the pool?
With Gus, yes.
Wow.
And so that's that's a good thing. It's pretty funny. He's hilarious. I play golf, mm-hmm. but I mean, you actually have to play golf to say you play golf. So,
exactly.
I'm hoping to get back to playing a little bit more golf.
At least to keep score. Yeah. If you keep score, it's not fun.
Right.
You
know? I actually have a kayak that I used to fish from and paddle around. And I keep people ask me, well, you need to bring your kayak out. I said, I do. And so that's on the list of things to do, but mm-hmm. there's just not time.
Well, you've got Spanish Lake out by ESA. Yeah. You can maybe
Spanish Lake and time. Lake Martin and, mm-hmm. and then all the marshes around. It's a lot of fun.
It's beautiful.
We love to travel a bit and go to wine country. And so that's a big kind of fun thing, although that's actually related to work in a sense. Lauren teaches out there every year and accompany some students
in California.
So we extend our trip and have a lot of fun.
It's nice.
Yeah.
And then it kind of pays for your pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you, Lauren? You have outside activities?
you know,
cleaning the house, you know.
I love what I do.
I know you do.
I always have paperwork to organize and studio things to think about, students to think about, and in my spare time, that's basically what I do. But at night, we shut down, unless I have a rehearsal or he has a board meeting or something.
Devices away.
We have a glass of wine. We watch some of our favorite Netflix series, and sometimes we binge watch, I like to hang out with him at the pool when we can. I used to play tennis, but my knees won't allow me to do that anymore. I like to work out. I like to exercise. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I have a really well-rounded life that I enjoy, and I enjoy doing ESA activities with Paul.
That's great. Yeah,
so. I love that school, and I love everything about it. I love what it's done for my own. For mm-hmm. our kids and watching him move up through the ranks of mm-hmm. teaching and having adoring students. he was a phenomenal teacher. And then to move into administration and then as headmaster, it's been wonderful for me to watch him grow that way. And I feel so good for the school that he's in the role he's in because his vision is, he knows it. He knows the school from the inside out as a parent, as a teacher, as mm-hmm. an administrator. Mm-hmm. He knows every detail and he can navigate the water so well.
Right.
And he comes home and he's never agitated or upset about anything. He just handles every situation and moves on.
Yeah.
And
that's a beautiful testament. And I know we see that as parents when we've been out there. I mean, the student body, they're just cohesive.
Yeah.
And they
are
chill,
definitely.
If you can use that term.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
as stressful as school can be, there's a real family feeling.
Absolutely.
Community. People care about
and
one another.
And I feel part of that community too.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that I get to be a part of it and go to functions with Paul and watch the school grow. It's exciting for me.
I want to see great things continue to happen with that, with ESA. And mm-hmm. and again, congratulations on the number one ranking in the state for private schools. It's incredible.
It's pretty neat. Yeah.
It's very neat. Yeah.
It's great that this area has such a great option for people. And it's a huge asset, I think, to Acadiana as well. Similar to the way that Lauren was talking about having a symphony in the community and having a school of such stature here makes this place a viable place for a lot of people who, you know, wouldn't think about moving to Louisiana. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and quite frankly, if I had ranked all of the places in the United States where I would live, this would have been very low on the list, just out of ignorance. You know, I didn't know about this place, but I think Lafayette is one of the most vibrant and exciting and wonderful places to live and to raise a family. And the uniqueness of the French culture and the pervasiveness of that kind of that underlies everything and all of the musical and artistic opportunities that are here really... it's in our souls here, and I wouldn't want to live many other places in the world. When I was finishing my PhD, I was on a track to be at a university position, a research position, and so that in the kind of pathway for that is a postdoctoral position, and I'd had a couple of different offers around the country for that. And when it came down to it, Lauren and I, we had built kind of a life here already, and in a musical life here, and we decided to stay here and to kind of build upon what we had and really embrace this community and make this our home. So it's an amazing place to live, and it's such a gem. And I don't know that people around, we get a little bit of press, you know, you see, mm-hmm. you see in the years when the economy's doing better, you know, number one city in the United States to live, or the happiest place in America to mm-hmm. live. And I think that's all true, but that's just scratches the surface of who we are.
It's the day to day that we love here. And Paul and Lauren Baker, we couldn't wind down on a better note than that, Paul. I'm so glad that you both decided to move here.
Yeah.
And stay here and enrich our whole community. And I want to thank you again for taking time to be on Discover Lafayette.
Sure. Thank you for shedding light on all these different cultural things in this area and how great our community is.
It's my pleasure. I love our community. And you exemplify what the many wonderful things that we have here. So thank you both for taking time. And I'd like to thank our listeners also for listening to Discover Lafayette. And before we sign off, William McFarland, thank you. We're here in AOC Community Media, beautiful studio. I want to thank you for allowing me to do this podcast. Check us out, please, on discoverlafayette.net. And you can subscribe to Discover Lafayette on any media where you get your podcast. I'm Jan Swift with Discover Lafayette.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its Board of Directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.